Hey, welcome to Relationships 101. I'm Christine Niffen here on KMOX, and we're talking about relating. Why? Because it's not always easy. So that's what we do here on KMOX. Tonight is no exception, except a little light snow going on. It's kind of a fun night out there. I like the snow, though. People think you need counseling if you like the snow, but I guess I can't counsel myself. So anyway, I'm enjoying it. Woke up to a little dusting this morning. I thought it was kind of nice. Nothing crazy on the roads. It was all good. Listen, tonight we're going to be addressing the idea of people who are sort of contemplating divorce. I think this is a particularly relevant topic right now, sort of due to the declining economy. I read an article a month or so ago on the show that talked about the correlation of recession and divorce. I mean, there's a lot of that, the financial stress. We've had Ruth Hayden on here talking about the problems couples have with money. There's a lot of stress going on right now, particularly in the economy. And it's pushing people to, I guess, contemplate that with the stress, but particularly with the stress when things aren't going right to begin with. I remember one of the states was actually sort of making some new case law of how to deal with the fact that people want to get divorced and they can't even sell their house to get out. I mean, in the old days, judges would divide the house and sell it, or somebody would buy somebody out. But now that some of these houses, the mortgages are higher than what the house is worth. People are having to stay in their houses, and they're actually developing new case law of how you have to live together, what rules you have to follow if eventually you want to get a divorce when you move out. So that's kind of a crazy thing going on right now. But we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking with Susan Pease Gedwa, I believe. I'll have to check into that. LCSW, about her new book titled Contemplating Divorce. First, though, a quick announcement. Listen, be sure to check out the relationship advice column on the KMOX blog page. This week speaks to the issue of control in relationships. It sort of addresses what control looks like and where controlling behavior comes from. So if that's something you're dealing with in your relationship, be sure to check out the relationship advice column, Christine's relationship advice column, on the KMOX blog page. So here we go. How do you know when divorce is the answer and when it isn't? Ending a marriage can be a shattering, life-altering event that, like marriage itself, should not be done without much consideration. Just as there are right and wrong reasons to marry, there are good and bad reasons to divorce. In contemplating divorce, therapist Susan Pease Gedwa, LCSW, guides couples in crisis through a series of tests and relationship evaluations to help them decide on what is best for them. With non-judgmental sensitivity, she provides couples at a crossroads with the tools they need to cope with the emotional roller coaster of contemplating divorce and make the monumental decision of whether to stay or go. Susan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Christine. Thank you.
Listen, help me with the pronunciation of your last name.
You said it perfectly. It's Susan Pease Gedwa.
Okay, well, that's good. Well, I can thank the producer for passing that along, so that's a very good thing, and I'm very happy.
Yes.
Listen, I want to read something, because this really struck me in the beginning. It's in the intro. I have it marked here. This is the intro of your book. It says, I believe that because my parents felt that divorce was only for the weak and therefore not an option, they remained married for many more years than they should have. Day after day and night after night, they fought, mercilessly tearing each other down. As children caught in this dynamic, my siblings and I suffered tremendously from our parents' unwillingness to accept that they were simply two very different people who no longer brought out the best in each other, if indeed they ever did. While our parents meant well, and I don't fault them for their choices, they didn't do us kids any favor by staying in a life of misery they generously deemed matrimony. Many, if not most, nights, I found myself wishing they would divorce, because even as a young girl, I knew there had to be a better option than the constant fighting they engaged in. What they ended up modeling to us children was that marriage entails incredible sacrifice and a life sentence of suffering. That's heavy, but that's, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was something that I definitely can understand their thinking. They thought divorce is a failure, like many people do, and they just didn't want to have to go there. So they were more willing to stay in a marriage that was very unhappy and unhealthy than go their separate ways.
Right. And there'll be a lot of people out there. Everybody runs the gamut. There's probably going to be a lot of listeners out there tonight who think that, you know what, for better or for worse, you do stick it out, you do all this stuff, and they would probably tend to disagree with you. What persuasive type things would you say quickly to help them with that?
Well, I have a saying that I believe that the world needs more happy people, not more married people.
Okay.
And, you know, there's definitely a thinking that I understand of it's selfish to divorce, and you're only thinking of your own needs and not the needs of the kids and the other spouse and the family. And I just think that it has to be balanced. I really relish the fact that people take the commitment of marriage seriously. I think that's a wonderful thing. And I do think that people should think many things through before making the decision to divorce. But I also don't see divorce as failure any more than I see marriage for 50 years as success.
Yes, I like that. I saw that in your book. I think I tend to agree with you on that. It's really about the substance and quality of it, don't you think?
I really do. And I think one of the important points in what you read was that staying together, my parents modeled that marriage was awful. It was an unhealthy thing. It was something that they couldn't get out of and had to suffer through. And that's what my knowledge of marriage was as a child. So, in fact, I actually didn't get married myself until I was 43, which was 4 years ago. So I was scared of it. I didn't want to get into that commitment.
And listen, there's another typical thing you see, too, because I really found your book interesting because I do lots of marriage and couples counseling. It probably is one of my favorite things to do. People find that strange, but I very much enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
Another way I think that manifests itself with some people is that they avoid conflict at all costs. So they really rob the relationship real intimacy because they won't speak up and say when their feelings are hurt or when something's upsetting them because they want to avoid conflict at all costs. That's another manifestation for children who grow up in a house that there's a lot of yelling and fighting.
Oh, absolutely. And I actually know a couple, I just found out a couple weeks ago, that a guy friend of mine just told his wife out of the blue that he wanted out, and she had no idea he was unhappy. And I do talk about that in the book, that I feel like that's so unfair to the spouse that doesn't know it's coming because they don't have a chance to respond. And you mentioned something that fights and disagreements actually can deepen a relationship, and it doesn't give the relationship that opportunity if you don't say what's really on your mind.
Oh, absolutely. And I saw that. Definitely want to get to that. I did see that. Listen, here's what I want to say, and I want to get your feedback on this because this is your topic that you're the expert on here. These are some of my observations of the biggest problems couples have. And, you know, we all sort of say some of the same things. We maybe just say it a little bit differently, but I guess I call them sort of the universal truths and the patterns that we notice. Some of the biggest things I see are people don't know how to handle the differences. The differences start getting viewed as right and wrong. And I always say, short of bank robbery and murder, there really is no right and wrong, that they're just differences. People don't understand that the differences can be productive and that if there's a continuum where there's contention is where people are sort of on opposite ends of the spectrum. And if they're forced to have to come to the middle, there's equity in having gotten there between the two people. And, you know, it causes them to grow and stretch, which I think relationships should be about personal growth. The other one is the validation piece. They think if they're validating your feelings or admitting they've done something wrong or that they've intentionally made you feel that way. So people aren't getting their feelings validated, so the issues are never really going away.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of things also do you see as some of the biggest problems that couples have to deal with?
I do think that one of the biggest ones that I see are when couples try harder to convince the other person of their perspective rather than trying to understand what their spouse is saying. And what I see it creating is something I call unconscious polarization, where, and I'll just use an example of a spender and a saver. The spender spends, and the saver thinks that they have to save more, so the spender thinks they can spend more, and so they keep going on into their separate respective corners,
mm-hmm.
and they don't work to understand why saving is important to the saver or spending is important to the spender, because they just do that automatic thing of it's wrong and you shouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't take the time to understand what's underneath a behavior.
Yeah, what, right. And it's that's that whole big right and wrong thing. And that, yeah, that really, that that's something that when I work with couples and I'll say, look, short of the bank robbery and murder, it's, you know, you can come up with a few other things, but of course. But I'm like, it's not really right or wrong. They're just differences. And I always tell the couples, I say, look, you know, when I explain this and say it that way, everybody shakes their head because intellectually they get that. But emotionally, it takes a number of months for people to be okay with that and really come to grips with that. Because once they can let that down, the resistance seems to sort of melt away.
Right. It takes months and a lot of reminders.
Yes.
With a couple right now that in every session, one of them has said, oh, I'm wrong because I've done this, or he or she is wrong. And I always have to point out that it's not about right or wrong. So I'm really glad that you take that stance as well.
Yeah, I don't really let people use the word wrong in there.
Right.
And my favorite thing is when, you know, well, he, I'm like, who's he? That's one I always love to. Right. I'm like, there's someone else in the room. It's not a he or she. What are their names? Okay, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking with Susan Peace Guetta with her new book, Contemplating Divorce, A Step-by-Step Guide to Deciding Whether to Stay or Go. You're listening to Relationships 1 on KMOX, The Voice of St. Louis.
Now, back to Relationships 101 with Christine Niffen on KMOX.
Hey, we're talking to Susan Peace Guetta about her new book, Contemplating Divorce. If you're just joining us, A Step-by-Step Guide to Deciding Whether to Stay or Go. Susan, I really did like this book, and I'm picking some sections out. you have a section that says, distinguish filtered from unfiltered emotions, and you write, I've seen many people try to move too quickly through the decision-making process as a way of avoiding their unfiltered feelings of sadness or anger and not getting their needs and desires met, or the vulnerability of having to ask for what they needed. In any case, when people avoid or become out of touch with their true emotions but continue forging ahead, all roads lead to regret. This is true whether they stayed married or divorced. Help just the readers to understand what you mean by distinguishing filtered from unfiltered emotions.
Well, I think I call them unfiltered emotions, and these are the ones that are in direct response to something that happens to us. And there really are only six: mad, sad, glad, scared, surprised, and disgusted.
Okay.
Those are the immediate feelings that we get. Once we have those, as human beings, everybody does this, so it's not wrong, but we put those feelings through a thought filter, where we tell ourselves a story and try to make sense of something. And we come out with what I call filtered emotions. And these are much more complicated emotions based on the story more than they are based on the original thing that gave us the emotion to begin with. So why it's important to know the difference is because the unfiltered emotions are the ones that actually have more information for us to help us get through the process, whereas the emotions based on the story we make up don't help us in reality. They just complicate matters and they keep us confused.
Give me an example of the story.
Well, when I'm dealing with divorcing people, I often, especially the women I talk to, so their husband says, I want to leave. The immediate emotion, the unfiltered emotion, is sadness, perhaps fear,
yes,
perhaps anger. Then what they do is they put that fact through the thought filters, and they come out with a bunch of stories about he must be having an affair, I'm going to be a bag lady, no one will ever love me again. You know, how could he do this to me? So it's a much more complex set of emotions based on stories.
And is fear one of the biggest ones? Because we can certainly project a lot of those things that are not necessarily reality from fear.
Absolutely, yes. I see fear as a huge motivator for people to make unhealthy decisions.
Well, and that's a lot. Do you think that has a lot to do with the fact that people really just... A lot of people don't really like change very much.
Right. I think that's, again, part of the human condition. We just like our comfort zone.
You know that fun little book, Who Moved My Cheese?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I started out as Mouse C. I really would get a little bent out of shape with the change. I've now progressed to B. Okay, here's change again. But I don't know that my personality will ever be, let me throw a whole lot of change at myself. I just don't think I'm geared for that.
Yeah. I know very few people who like that or can handle that, really.
Yeah, maybe the big, you know, yes, maybe those, you know, that guy from, you know, England who flies all the planes or something. But yeah, there aren't too many people into that. So the part you say about it always leads to regret, the road leads to regret, making too hasty a decision. I mean, I really get a number of women who, and primarily women initially, certainly, you know, a lopsided amount of women compared to men coming into my office. And there is that big question. I'm trying to figure out, I don't know what to do. I feel stuck. I don't, you know, we're going to go into a question about that in a minute, but should I stay or should I go? And, you know, what I do after I talk to them the first session is I really try to encourage them to see if they can get their spouse in for couples counseling, because I guess my feeling is that, you know, it becomes, I tell them that it becomes apparent rather quickly who's really willing to do the work and who's not. But sometimes that's the only way you can set it aside once and for all. I mean, you're either going to give it a last try with somebody, a professional, and see, you know, what we can do about, because, you know, you talk about needs. Unhappiness in relationships always equates to unmet needs. And yes, sometimes they haven't asked for them. Sometimes they think they have, and it just hasn't been heard properly. And sometimes you're with somebody who's not going to meet your needs. It really does run the gamut. But at least you can give it one last try. And then if the person doesn't participate, I mean, then you pretty much have your answer, because one person can't make a relationship.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I'm sure you see often, as I do, is that the person who's contemplating divorce hasn't told the other person exactly how happy they are. So that other person, when they're not working as hard, it's a surprise to the one who's contemplating divorce. So I think one of the things that's so important about getting that other spouse into counseling is that you can then have an honest discussion about, if this doesn't change, I'm going to go. And how does that impact you? So it's really a way to have a neutral person helping this couple come to terms with their differences.
Right. And yes. And, you know, what we have to just accept, and what's not kind of the deal breakers, or, you know, they're called different things in people's different books. But yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very important thing. Listen, we're going to take a quick break here, as we like to do in KMOX. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion about contemplating divorce. You're listening to Relationships 101 on KMOX, the voice of St. Louis.
Welcome back to Relationships 101 and Christine Niffen on KMOX.
Hey, we're back. For those of you just joining us, we've been speaking with Susan Pease Gedwa about her new book, Contemplating Divorce. If you're out there struggling and you don't know what to do, you're even thinking about it, give a listen here and think about getting that book. It's an excellent book. Very, very excellent. Susan, we talked a minute ago about needs, and I've always said that unhappiness in relationships equates to unmet needs. I talk about the things all relationships need in order to be happy, and you just do a light reverse on the words and say the five types of needs happy marriages satisfy. What are some of the big types of needs that happy marriages satisfy?
Well, I borrowed from Abraham Maslow to develop this piece, and what I do, I feel that marriage is a living, breathing entity in and of itself, just like a human being. And Maslow looked at humans and he said we have five different kinds of needs. So there are survival needs, safety needs, love needs, esteem needs, and actualization needs. And the last one basically means when you've gotten all your needs met, you're then able to go out and give back to the world.
Right.
Yeah. So in a marriage, if you are just married and not talking to each other, you know, you're going to be in the survival mode. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. And you talk about the safety needs, not just physical safety, but I believe you're talking about, but when I always say to clients, I go, look, people have to feel safe enough to be able to say how they feel. You know, in a relationship, you should be able to say anything that you need to say. You should try to think about your diplomatic delivery, but
right.
You should feel safe enough to say anything you want to say without the fear that somebody's going to get mad or go away. Because when you have bad reactions to what other people say, as long as they're keeping in check how they deliver it, then you don't make it safe for them to come to you, and you rob the relationship, the real honesty and the real feelings of how the person's doing.
Absolutely. That's a really great point.
you know, you have to feel safe in your relationship. And that's really one that we work on. I mean, you work with the couples, you know what I mean. Somebody starts to say how they feel. You naturally, you know, you try to figure out, okay, well, you know, you never talk to me. Okay, well, then you have to talk to the other one. Well, what are some of the reasons you think you don't communicate? Well, whenever I do, I just get blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, it takes a while to work with the couples to get rid of the eye rolling and the sighing because you don't like what the other person says.
Is that right or wrong thing?
Right. Is that right or wrong thing? Or the, you know, the but, which is not validating because you're spending the whole time trying to defend yourself. And I, you know, I have to keep, you know, really it takes some work because a lot of couples have gone through years of really, you know, poor dynamics of interacting with each other. And it takes quite a while to sometimes break that down to the point of, and really, I mean, sometimes you have to whip up in there a little bit.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that I try to teach couples about is emotional maturity. And what the way I describe that is it's increasing your tolerance for discomfort. And what that means is when your spouse is saying something that's totally triggering you, you don't have to react.
Right.
You can bite your tongue, wait till they're done, ask them some questions, really, again, understand their perspective, and then state what you need or what you think.
Right, because the reality is, you know, we're not, you know, people aren't, nobody's creating in couples counseling a bunch of stuff that isn't there. These are feelings people have. And the resentment builds when, you know, you're sitting across from somebody who claims they love you or you're supposed to be loved in a way you think love is, and they're telling you how wrong you are all the time. That's not love.
Well, you can love someone and have that dynamic. It's
I shouldn't say that's not love. I should say that doesn't feel like love to the other person.
Well, I think we're all fed a line that we are supposed to love, and this is what love looks like. And the reality, I think, in a marriage, what makes it work is much more than love. It's compatibility, communication, honesty, respect. So love is definitely an ingredient, but I actually don't think it's the most important ingredient that we need.
No, I think we have to be, I think there needs to be a degree of similarity on the core values. I think those always help. I mean, if you're honest, you're not going to put up with somebody who's dishonest all the time. You don't have to make yourself put up with somebody who's dishonest.
Right. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, we're going to take a break again. And when we come back, we're going to be finishing up with Susan Pease Gedwa on her book, Contemplating Divorce. It's Christine Niffin on Relationships 101.
Now, back to Relationships 101 with Christine Niffin on KMOX.
Hey there, we are talking contemplating divorce and all the struggles people go through because that's not an easy decision at all. And I know how hard it is for people because I deal with that a lot in my private practice. And so does Susan Pease Gedwa. We're talking about her new book, Contemplating Divorce, A Step-by-Step Guide to Deciding Whether to Stay or Whether to Go. Susan, in your book, you discuss what you call the marital indecision cycle. You say every marriage and every meaningful relationship, for that matter, has good times and not so good times. This is natural and normal. However, when you are questioning whether to remain in the relationship, these high and low cycles may be more profound. After meeting with hundreds of clients who were contemplating divorce, I began to notice many similarities in a very predictable path that these people were following. This marital indecision cycle, as I call it, can feel like imprisonment, even though all it would take to be free would be to step off the merry-go-round. Listen, Susan, tell us a little bit about the sort of turmoil one goes through and a little bit about the marriage indecision cycle.
Okay, well, it's basically time after time I would meet with people, and one week they would say, things are terrible and I've got to leave, and the next week they'd say, oh, things are fine, and as if nothing had been wrong. And
right.
I really began to see this amazing up and down with people, and a cycle that, you know, basically starts with things are routine, and then tensions begin to escalate, and there may be a blow up and a fight, and that person's ready to leave, but they don't. So then things de-escalate, and they get back into the routine. And this, I have seen this go on for years, and I've had people come in and tell me it's gone on for 20 years, 25 years. So I know people can endure this, and I'm amazed at how long. So what I see happening with people who live in this indecision is they are worn down and drained because of it. They can't really fully live their life because they're always questioning. It's like a hole in the ship.
Well, listen, when things aren't right in the emotional realm of relationships, it can be pretty encompassing on the mental energy.
Right, exactly. And especially if you have to co-parent and deal with this other person on a level such as that all the time.
And isn't the only reason this cycle is allowed to go on because nobody's getting in and dealing with anything, so it's never getting resolved?
Right. Nobody's speaking their mind. No one's doing any kind of intervention.
And, you know, there's that fear that, you know, that I talk a lot about boundaries. I mean, people will come in and I'll say, look, eventually, you know, if they come in and say, oh, my husband will never come. Now, I'm not picking on guys out there, but I hear women say that a lot. My husband won't come. Mm-hmm. And not that the wives won't come, because that has happened too. But you hear a lot of that. You know, I often say, look, eventually you have to understand it's going to have to get to the point where you're just going to have to sort of keep, you know, kind of ratcheting things up a bit and say you're afraid that it's going, you know, spiraling down. You don't want that to happen. And, you know, you want to know if this is important enough, you know, to suspend all judgment, even if you don't think it's going to be helpful, and just go in with me. Is this relationship important enough for you to just, you know, to try that with me? Because I don't want it to end, but I'm concerned about where it's going. And, you know, you just have to keep kind of ratcheting up from there. But that's very hard because people are so convinced they're not going to come. Or even worse, what if they come and then it doesn't work out? Then they're driving it to the end of the, you know, the end of the marital indecision cycle. And sometimes that's even frightening.
Oh, absolutely. And one thing I see often is people don't want to be the bad guy. They don't want to be the one who says, I don't want to stay in this marriage. So it can really just get out of hand with going on, never ending.
Yeah, and we've talked about needs a lot because that is a lot what it's about. And, you know, people often, you know, they come in different stages. Like I said, sometimes they won't ask for their needs to be met.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they tried that early on in the marriage and got the, you know, direct or indirect message that wasn't going to do any good. Nobody was going to hear. So they sort of just stopped doing that. Or maybe they grew up with that message, so they never really perfected that adult life skill anyway.
Exactly.
And, you know, and they don't really do that. And they're just so convinced. And it's too frightening to sort of push themselves and really be vulnerable and say, this is what I need, that they just go ahead and take the easier way out and end it sometimes.
Yeah, and the unfortunate part about that is that, you know, they will probably go on to a new relationship and just recreate the same thing because they haven't dealt with whatever's going on for them.
Yeah, they haven't dealt with, you know, and that's so much about, I talk all the time about finding your own voice. I mean, we're much happier in life when we have our own voice. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I've talked before in the show, I never had my voice when I was younger. I used to, you know, something would happen to me in a relationship and I'd be upset and I'd have to call five people and go, well, wouldn't this upset you too?
And not tell the person directly.
Oh, no. But they were supposed to tell me directly. And so, you know how that is. What's
right.
wrong with them? And
right.
so, but when you find your own voice, it's a great thing. I mean, you know, people get tired of that cliche that people use in therapy that, you know, there's nothing wrong with your feelings. There really is nothing wrong with your feelings. It's just really about how you deliver them and what you do with them. People have a very difficult time being vulnerable enough. And I believe vulnerability and intimacy go hand in hand, and you really can't have one without the other.
Right. And if there is someone who is not able to hear your feelings, then it probably isn't a marriage that's going to work or one that you should stay in.
I mean, if you try to go see somebody, because most of the time, if it's gone on years, they're going to need a little mediation.
Sure, and I am saying, you know, they need intervention and support and all that, but I do think that there are some people who cannot fully be in relationship because of abuse issues, anger issues.
Oh, absolutely. That vulnerability is too much for them and they can't do that. I think that's a lot. What about when you get that come on totally strong in the beginning and then they did the 360 on you and then they're crying in the office going, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree. Yeah.
Susan, listen, I think this is a seriously, I'm not, you know, I'm a Scorpio, and they say we don't give false flattery. I think this is a wonderful book, a step-by-step guide. One of the things I like really equally about it is all the exercises that you have in there. I just think those are wonderful things. I mean, things about, you know, where's your relationship out of balance? Are you clearly asking for what you need? And then, of course, you know, you run into that thing about, you know, I don't feel loved. I'm like, well, really, what would somebody be doing to make you feel loved? I don't know. I'm like, well, how can they know? And, you know, evaluate of the workability factors, you know, our trust and, you know, safety and communication and things there to be able to make it work out. So I think there's a lot of really great exercises, a lot of great things to think about, whether you're contemplating divorce or, and you feel a little, you know, trapped with it in that marital cycle, or if you're actually single. So I think it's a great thing. So real quick, we got about 20 seconds here. Let people know how they can get a copy of Contemplating Divorce.
Okay. I have a website, which is contemplatingdivorce.com, and there is a page where they can order it through Amazon. Most local bookstores have it as well, Barnes & Noble, Borders, that you know, the general big bookstores. And they will order it, too, if they don't have it in stock.
Well, sounds good. Listen, Susan, thank you very much for joining us. The book is Contemplating Divorce. I highly recommend it. Thanks again.
Thank you, Christine.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so I know a couple of people were trying to call during the first hour, but, you know, this format here is an hour with the author. Then we're opening the lines. So next hour, probably about 10 after the news, we're going to be opening up the lines. And we want to hear from you, 314-436-7900 and 800-925-1120, toll free. Give us a call. I mean, what do you think? Are you dealing with this right now? Do you know somebody who is? Are you thinking you want to get out and can't figure it out? You know, are you somebody who stayed in it for 20 years? Years and not gotten your needs met? Are you somebody who jumped the ship early? Are you divorced and happy about it? Give us a call next hour. We'll be back after the break.